Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I got it.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon once again, a very cool...
It's nice, isn't it?
Oh, it's refreshing how cool the rugby dungeon is. How you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you, Tim. Very well.
This must be your regular spot these last few days.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
On the squeaky chair over there is Phil.
Yeah, hello, Tim. Sorry, I'm really squeaking at the moment. I need some WD-40 on this.
Yes.
Do you know WD-40 is a secret formula?
Secret formula?
It is.
Like the KFC herbs and spices?
Yeah, and the reason I know this is because DW-40 moved...
WD-40.
WD-40, yeah. Moved home. I think it is in Kansas, moved offices. And the CEO had to, in a very American way, handcuff the recipe to WD-40 to his wrist and transfer it between offices.
Wow.
Yeah.
What does WD stand for in WD-40? And what's the 40 stamp mean?
It's a secret, Tim. Did you not hear the whole story?
Is it 40 ingredients?
It's 40 herbs and spices.
So I'm just looking up that it stands for water displacement. Because I'd heard in the past that it's not actually a lubricant.
I've heard that.
It's an abrasive. Yeah.
I've heard that it doesn't lubricate.
It does something else.
Yes, I've heard this.
Yeah. Unclear from a very brief Google.
Unclear.
Google search.
If you know, that could be one of the other things that you contact us about. We've had a long running saga of emails on the subject of big cats over the last month. Maybe it can be lubricants and abrasives for the next month.
Perfect.
If you any other emails, whether it's a pre-season review for your team, or whether it's any reaction to any rugby story or anything else, contact edchasers@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. This is the only rugby podcast that's there 52 weeks a year. We have been for nearly 10 years. And we will make sure you get a fix of rugby every single Monday morning. And if you appreciate that, you can hit subscribe, you can leave a 5-star review. And for more content, you can go to patreon.com/eggchasers. On this episode, we've got, a bit of rugby championship to talk about. But let's rattle through the rugby news of the week. What's been going on?
There's been a few signings this week.
There have. Leicester Tigers have signed an English qualified... Australian?
Was there two English qualified Australians?
I believe there was. One a wing and one a hooker, I think.
Yeah, so they signed two hookers, which Leicester already have some depth at hooker.
They do, yeah. And
they also signed another hooker, non-English qualified, who has played in England previously, in Joe Tau...
Taufanua.
Tau Tefe.
Taufatete.
The American.
The American.
Yes,
who is the highest scoring international hooker ever.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's a great fact. I need to get that fact button back.
Yeah, we do.
Fact.
He's a phenomenal finisher from close to the line because he's a big, strong boy. He's got a low centre of gravity and he just bulldozes over from a couple of yards out. So
did he play at Bordeaux?
I think I should have it in front of me.
Who am I thinking? No, I'm thinking about Dweeba.
Yes.
Dweeba is he is Bordeaux, isn't he?
Yeah, and
Joseph Dweeba.
He was playing Dweeba. The weekend, Dweeba.
Yeah.
Potato, potato.
Yes. So he's also a big strong boy.
He is a very big strong boy.
With a low centre of gravity.
Yes. And he only lasted 30 minutes of the game, though. We'll get on to that. We'll get on to that.
Yes.
We'll get on to that in a minute. So, you mentioned some signings. Do some of them fit in with the Premiership teams that we're going to be looking at over the next...
Well, Jason Woodward signed for
Sale.
Jason Woodward signed for Sale Sharks. So that's
a decent one.
And there's a former Sale man who has been... A former Sedgley Park man as well, who has been playing in Jersey, who's just signed for Saracens.
Who's that?
In James Flynn.
Who looks like... He looks like the...
James Flynn signed for Saracens.
Yes. That is quite remarkable.
And also, so we've mentioned on the podcast many a time, Phil's former teammate, Nick Flynn.
Flynny.
The two
played together, I think, briefly at Sedgley.
And they look quite similar. And it was only when... So Mark is Nick Flynn's brother. He was at Broughton Park and he sort of looks after the bar quite a lot. And so I was chatting to him at the club a couple of months back, and I said, how's your bro getting on? And he thought I was talking about Nick. I went, no, James. He went, no, James isn't my brother. He's like, what? I just assumed. He came through the Sale Academy. They look the same. Same surname.
I'm pretty certain they both propped at the same time for Sedgley as well. One loose head and one tight head.
Sorry, I'm going to have to stop you both here. If I dared go into so much detail about...
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
James Flynn.
You're right.
Nobody cares.
He signed for Saracens. Now everyone cares.
Yeah.
Saracens have signed
a backup... No, please, guys, continue.
Saracens have signed a backup prop. Brilliant. What else?
Yeah. Shall we talk about Rosendale some more? some level 7, level 5 nonsense?
Well, I tell you what, that's a great tease. Hang on, let's do the big, the less important but more high profile rugby stories, and then we'll get onto your beef with Byron McGuigan.
which was
just opened. That's just reminded me that's a little bit that people on Patreon got last week. They got the Byron McGuigan JB beef.
Absolute beef now.
Big rib of Byron JB beef on our Patreon. So we'll get a little bit more of that. What were you going to say, Phil?
I was going to say Woodward. That is an interesting signing.
I think it's a great signing.
So, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, or 4 years ago, whether that's a great signing, I would have said, yes, absolutely. I can't recall seeing him in the last 2 years.
No, injury.
And last time I remember seeing him was when he was in the crowd watching a game and he did that wanker sign and got picked up by the cameras.
Oh, God.
Excuse us. Yeah. I think he is obviously... Well, this is why I like it, because... I suspect it's a deal favourable to Sale rather than to Mr. Woodward. I think it's kind of a sign of things to come, which players have done really well in the past, who dropped in form, will be signing these sorts of deals. But if he is 80% of the player that he was when he was in his prime at Gloucester, I think they've done really well.
Well, and before Gloucester, when he
Bristol.
Was... And before Bristol?
Hurricanes.
My beloved Hurricanes, when he won. He won Super Rugby... For my beloved Hurricanes, he was playing on the wing, and he pushed Julian Surveyor, onto the bench.
Wow!
Yeah,
a goal kicking option as well for Sale.
Well, do you know I'm
without George
sure
Ford?
Yeah,
I'm making this up now. I know I'm making this up. I think his first game for the Hurricanes lost by about 60 points, but I can't remember who it was against.
Doesn't matter, JB. Too much detail.
Yeah, detail.
I mean, he's now 32, so that would be... The first game would be in about 2010 or 11.
Yeah, but I'm guessing it's Crusaders. Everyone loses.
Everyone gets hammered.
Crusaders.
And in that period of time, if it was 2009-10, it would have been the period of time where the South African Super Rugby teams were pretty good.
Yes.
Shortly after the World Cup and the Lions...
Let's find out where... You guys talk about some more signings. Let me find out about Jason Woodward's first ever game for Hurricanes.
Well, what other news is there? So, have Wasps made any statement on their reported financial issues?
There was... So, where did I read it? I read a little bit from... It was Wasps CEO, I seem to think, made a statement. But I can't remember where I read it. But there was a very... Very interesting line in the statement, which is one of those things. You know when a football manager is about to be sacked, and they got the
vote of confidence.
The chairman, the dreaded vote of confidence, or the chairman, or the owner, or whoever it is, makes a statement along the lines of, they are definitely not getting sacked. We have full faith in them, and you immediately know they're about to be sacked.
Yes.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Derek Richardson.
Yeah.
Has denied the club would enter administration.
Yes.
After missing the latest deadline to pay the repayments owed on a £35 million retail bond.
That's bad.
Quote, "We are not in administration and we are not going to be."
That, so
the Irish businessman told The Times.
My immediate reaction to that was the vote of confidence style football manager. He's not going to get sacked. He's not been sacked. He is not going to get sacked. We have every faith in our manager. And then 2 weeks later, they get sacked.
All right, that's exactly what a bloke looking to refinance a £35 million bond would say.
It is. It's exactly that.
Yeah.
It's slightly worrying, though.
Although I there's two sides to this, to the financial issues. On the one hand, rising interest rates are bad.
Yes.
When you owe money. But on the other thing, the inflation's so bad, that £35 million will
be nothing
in a couple of years.
Pennies,
that'll be a season ticket cost.
Buy you a coffee in the ground.
But apparently, agents of Wasps players have been getting some calls from Premiership clubs because they're picking up on this story and but thinking there might be a bargain to be had.
There might be a bargain to be had, but how do you get Joe Launchbury into a club? I don't think you can do it. You can't use your marquee player rule. You can't do anything.
Well, there's only a couple of clubs who would have the headroom to sign him.
Worcester?
That's Worcester, it. Maybe. Newcastle?
Probably Worcester, don't you? Newcastle will.
Yeah.
I don't see this being I think.
Or for Launchbury, France.
Yeah, France,
Japan.
Yeah. Mm. That's another story. Manu to Japan after the World Cup. No surprise there.
I'm delighted with that. It can't come soon enough.
Yeah, he needs to earn as much money as he possibly can.
Yeah. No reflection on him at all.
We went past his house. Do you remember when.
We did go past his house.
We got dropped off after the. What's it called? The thingy sevens, North Dorset Sevens. Got dropped off in wherever that is. Was it Audley Edge?
Round there.
And yeah, it was Audley Edge. And no, it was somewhere nearby. And yeah, we got dropped off there and got. There's Manu's house.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
I imagine it is.
Someone's on the higher end of the salary cap. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, because of course he's within the salary cap because he can't be excluded yet.
So. I'm actually delighted that he's going. I think too many teams have really struggled with Manu for all the reasons that we've said in previous podcasts, and now everyone can move on and focus on rugby without him, which is what you need to do.
Very quick word on one story that we missed because it happened after the last podcast had been published. This thing always happens. There's always something good on a Monday that I'll be like, oh, I would like to have done that on the pod. Eddie Jones and his issue about public school rugby and comprehensive school. So briefly, do you remember what he said exactly?
Yeah, he said that it doesn't breed fortitude or resilience.
Yeah.
It's a stupid thing to say. It is a stupid thing to say because you only need to look at the list of achievements from people that came from private schools.
It doesn't always engender independence, is that what you said?
Well, it's just nonsense, isn't it? Yeah. It's just absolute nonsense. You only need to look at the list of what the old boys from private schools have done to realise, it does something. It certainly does something. It does have its problems, but to suggest you need to destroy it all. I mean, if we destroyed the private school system, there would be no real competitive rugby, I think, at school level, outside of a very small handful of schools.
Yeah, in certain parts of the country.
Yeah. Well, yeah, parts of the country. So, yeah.
Bristol would probably be all right.
The whole of the southwest and maybe the home counties as well. But like, we're in Manchester where you generally, except for a few rarities, you have to be at a fee-paying school to play rugby.
I mean, St Ambrose have a reasonably good team on here, don't they? But I can't think of any other really good school team.
No,
anyone running?
It wasn't a thing when I was a kid. The school that I went to had football, cricket, basketball.
Yeah.
That was it. There was no rugby teams. And we were not far from rugby league territory.
Bandit
nothing,
country.
Nothing at all.
Yeah, so just on that, I think it's worth reflecting on how rugby is seen in state schools, which is predominantly masculine, dangerous, risky. Why would you want to be the teacher that starts up the rugby team in, I don't know, Withenshaw High? I don't even know if that's a school I made it up. But like, why would you want to do that? You just don't. Football's easier, they understand it. And Rugby's a phenomenally complex game to understand and coach.
Having been a teacher, I can tell you one thing that has changed as well. Is my memory of school was there was a lot of extracurricular stuff that was done by teachers. It was all done by teachers. I remember thinking this when I started as a teacher, and I remember thinking, I wonder where this is going to be in 10 or 15 years' time. Teachers do not want to do it unless they're paid to do it.
Yeah.
No. And there's, you know, I
can understand, but that changes things because there's only... State schools haven't got extra pockets of money to go, Wednesday afternoon and evening, will you... No, I haven't got any more money. No, you're not going to do it. Saturday morning, no. Well, yeah, I'm not going to do it then.
Yeah, and there's really weird relationships between rugby clubs and schools, I think. So, one of the legacies I can think of is having the rugby club in North Wales, for the longest time, had got loads of lads playing from John Bright's, because John Bright's used to have a teacher that loved rugby, and they always had a rugby team. I don't know if they still do, but I think that link had stood the club well for a long time. So you need links between clubs and schools and teachers that play at one club and encourage the kids to go down. And also you need teachers who are probably club players anyway, because it is so difficult to teach. I mean, if you have a single teacher that is capable of, say, coaching, and not very many are, and they're a front rower, well, they're going to coach a very different brand of rugby to, say, what the winger would teach or the fly half. And you need time as well. You can't coach a rugby team with half an hour on a Thursday. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
It's a waste of time.
Absolute chaos.
Yeah. Chaos, waste of time. You couldn't teach anyone the laws. You just couldn't do it.
Go on, Phil.
I was going to say, I was talking to a friend of ours, someone that we've all played rugby with, who is a teacher in a private school in the Northwest. Well, it's a private school. I think it is fee paying, but you can also get in through the 11 plus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about the benefits of it, of rugby in... I think his half of the school is an all-boys school, and he's saying there's two really clear big benefits. One, it's an outlet for kids because of the physical confrontation. And number two, he said there is almost never any issues of fights or scuffles or anything like that, because rugby naturally sorts everyone into a hierarchy immediately. So everyone knows where they sit in the hierarchy. So
there's no need, is it?
Unless you get the two like absolute alphas have fallen out over something, which they're not going to, or unlikely because they're teammates, then everyone knows where they are in the pecking order. So it means there's no trouble at all.
That's very, very true.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I think it kind of, Eddie Jones's words got a little bit twisted. I also think he could have come at it more with a glass half full than a glass half empty, rather than saying what doesn't happen. He could say what the private school system has done for English rugby is absolutely amazing. I would love to facilitate ways to get a few more Kyle Sinclairs and Ellis Genges through.
Well, I'm like, yeah, and you know, maybe he does have a point, and this is where I try and steel man him. When I look at teams in the Northwest from, you know, rugby league towns, they do have a resilience. There is a resilience and a hardness there which just isn't taught. Now, that's not to say that the people who work incredibly hard to be good rugby players at private schools don't have a type of resilience, but it's just not that. And I remember many times now I've been playing, whether it be, you know, someone like an Oldham or an Old Winions, and I'm just astounded, or a witness even, just astounded by the grit. So there is definitely another level to it.
Yeah.
I can't put my finger on what it is. I don't know how you coach it. So if Eddie Jones just say, yeah, we need this, we need a different system to coach the thing, we don't know. I think it's probably cultural rather than anything else.
Yeah, it's probably lots of different factors to it.
Yeah,
it's definitely not as simple. But then with everything Eddie says to the media, you don't know how much to take him seriously, how much he's just winding people up, how much he's just having a bit of a rant.
Yeah, it must be cultural, because I can't imagine the state schools in Surrey are going to produce a gritty team.
The flip side is I was always growing up the better player than my brother, and my brother says it to me all the time.
That's what
Nick says to me a lot. Every now and again,
what happened? Pats you on the top of the head.
No, but when his kids are sort of chatting to me and they're like, "Did you play rugby, Uncle Tim?" "Yeah, yeah, I played rugby." Did you play? Play professionally? I went, no. But Nick always says he should have done. But I remember getting offered a scholarship and turning it down. I think it was Pangbourne College, or it was one of them in Berkshire. But I was basically the only player in the Berkshire team not at Wellington or Eton or Pangbourne or something. But so I didn't want to do it, and I don't regret anything. But what it did do was it totally demystified the whole private school thing, and I never felt that because I was just playing with him, and I was like, all right, they're just regular blokes. And
yeah,
they bleed and stuff, and so that I could have had that issue that people have when they get older and you get into corporate world, or you get all of that, and you feel inadequate in some way, and that just completely went because of rugby, because I just went and.
Well, saying which, Phil's brother Rob Logan MP, told me once, which I quite enjoy, which is if you want to teach poor kids aspiration, just show them how many average posh kids that there are. I was like, that's a really, really good point. Yeah. It goes both ways though. So I would just say this: I know of lads who I was playing with back in North Wales who did do the thing that you did and took up the scholarship to go to private school. And just because they had so much more time playing with coaches and being coached and being around better players, the improvement in them was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of them started playing pro. And they were nowhere near the best players when I played with them.
Yeah. It was definitely a slide. In terms of my rugby playing career, it was definitely a sliding doors moment. And I did all right, but I think, you know, I could have been a lot better. But
good coaching makes all the difference. And the last thing I'd say on this, I think it's a political thing. I just don't think that schools want the pushback from activists. So I was talking to Dr. Darren White on the Rugby Dungeon podcast, and I think I agree with him, to be fair, but I can see why lots of people wouldn't. But he's like, if kids don't want to play, they shouldn't be. You shouldn't force people to play rugby. Now, I don't really know where I stand on that. Certainly as an adult, you don't force people to play. As a kid, I mean, kids need to. You shouldn't absolutely force a kid to play, but on the other hand, if you don't compel them at least a little bit, they might never realise they like it.
Mm.
I mean, every kid would just rather not do things rather than do things.
Yeah, I'm certainly all for forcing them to do the training, and maybe even drawing the line at the contact side of the training. But like, I remember kids getting out of wanting to get out of PE, wanting to forget their PE kit or feign injury so they could just not do PE. And it's just a terrible, terrible attitude for your life if you're getting out of that. So I would always push people to do the training and do the fitness side of things, but I wouldn't necessarily push kids to do games full contact.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer to that is, but you can certainly see if a kid says no and then gets hurt, even if they would have said yes 3 weeks later, some nosy parent and activist type is going to be all over your school. So I don't think state schools need that pressure. I think that's probably one of the reasons.
I've just remembered something. Hold on. We need more. It just reminded me of Scott Quinnell. I unleash the dragon. Hold on.
I'm just so excited. What is going to happen?
The dragon.
It's going to be a fucking battle. I want an opportunity in life. I want to go out and I want to be better.
I want to hear about the dragon.
I'm so fucking proud of you, lads. What you've been through. We've had highs, we've had lows.
Can you hit marker so we can delete
it? No, I want to do it all.
That if you don't feel those butterflies in your stomach now.
It's like you, doing this before the podcast this
time. Those nerves in your stomach. If they are there now, when we walk out that door, they turn to dragons.
Yeah.
Because they get bigger and they get stronger. And we use them. And those dragons this year, I am convinced, are going to breathe fucking fire. We are going to go out and we are going to be School of Hard Knocks, the team that brings home the fucking bacon!
get them, boys, get them!
The bacon! And that was when he did that speech before sending his team out to play you, JB.
It might have been, actually. I threw a try scoring pass to Will Greenwood. Interception. But it is what it is. Do you know, I'm quite jaded to team talks now. I've heard so many of them. That was quite good.
Yeah.
I mean, the bacon bit at the end, I could be, I could be a bit different. But I quite like that one.
I think what you should do for Talk H is have some, sentimental music that can build behind you as you deliver your team talk.
Yeah,
that'll help.
Yeah, we sometimes play Ainaldi in our change room.
Wait, what? Change.
Ainaldi.
Pascal.
Yeah, the pianist.
Ainaldi.
Yeah. It's nice.
Ainaldi, yeah.
Yeah, you'll know it when you hear it. It's good. What was I going to say then? I'm going to say one last thing.
I was going to say, did either of you read the Cipriani article in the Mail about this?
No.
I think it's worth reading.
He went to, what's that one in Croydon?
He went to a few private schools, but because of his rugby talents, he got picked up by private schools. He wouldn't have gone otherwise. But he talks about Eddie Jones, and he makes some astute comments about the weaknesses in England, which he puts squarely at Eddie Jones's doorstep, particularly around, he makes a statement that I was like, yeah, that definitely rings true, where he says, England want to beat teams up, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but England want to beat teams up. When they fail to do that, their attacking shape is not good enough to be able to beat them in another way. Yeah. And that's an Eddie Jones issue.
Some of the things Cipriani says are really, really astute. I think he's a really smart guy when it comes to how to play the game of rugby. But I also think he's a very complex individual.
He also has chocolate Nesquik.
Yeah,
that's a choice.
It's a problem.
Incredibly complex because there's so much to like be uncertain about and not like. But you just read this and you see the way he plays the game when he's at his best.
Yeah.
And he thinks he can visualise it and think about it in a different way than other people.
His rugby brain's amazing.
But it's not just like...
He's definitely got something to offer.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is, it's not just like... this is unfair on Carlos Spencer's, I don't actually know. But you know, my perception of Carlos Spencer is just a genius with the ball in hand. It's more than... he's got all the skills ball in hand, but he seems to actually know about the complexities of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what has always impressed me about him when he talks about how to play rugby. Everything else I can take with a pinch of salt, but how to play rugby, he knows his apples.
He does, yes.
Yeah.
So it's worth reading. It's not a long article, but it's worth reading because I do think he makes some astute points about it.
Mm. Well, with that, should we get on to... Oh, no, go on then. Byron, JB, beef. And then we'll get on to some rugby championship.
Yeah, so... and then I'll ask you that separately, actually, off the pod, Phil. I was going to get some scouting information against about some Rosendale players that you must have played against. So we have Rosendale in the cup, and we had to fight tooth and nail. So I think... Well, we think, actually, in Talk H, that this might be the first time since the 60s or 70s that Talk H have been in the Lancashire Cup.
The full Lancashire Cup. Yeah.
So
is it just a straight knockout?
Yeah. Yeah. How long will it last in the Lancashire Cup? I don't know. So we've drawn... We're level 7. We've drawn level 5. Rosendale gave us a date.
Who's head coach is Byron McGuigan?
Whose head coach is Byron McGuigan?
Friend of the pod, standing for Phil, occasional host and guest.
Yeah, so we've been sending a few texts back and forth to each other. I'm trying not to give away too many of my cards, but ultimately, I think if the RFU want to run a cup competition, which is going to start in August, and is going to involve both clubs that pay money, who are basically semi-pro. Would you call Rosendale semi-pro?
They definitely pay a good number of their first team players.
Would you class Sedge as semi-pro?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're semi-pro, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rosendale semi-pro.
Some players will get more than others, but there's money floating around. They're semi-pro, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you're going to get amateurs playing semi-pros, which is absolutely fine. This is exactly what we trained for. This is exactly what we wanted. I think there needs to be flexibility in the scheduling, because you can't just say to an amateur team, look, you've got 3 weeks to raise a team in the middle of August when you didn't think you had a game and everyone's on holiday or whatnot. So we decided to do 2 days earlier on the 25th, offer Rosendale that. And no, you can do it on a weekend, because they wanted to train at Sedgley Park rather than play a bloody game of rugby. So anyway, everyone's come to their senses, and the good people at Rosendale said, yes, come down. We'll face you with our full strength team. So I'm very much like the dog that caught the corner. We've got to deal with Rosendale, which is going to be...
So when is that then?
Interesting.
What
week on Thursday.
Week on Thursday.
Ooh.
It's going to be brutal.
Might try and get down for that.
Yeah.
Quite like to see it.
It's at Rosendale.
It's at Moor Pit, yeah, which is Rosendale's ground. I've never been there. Never played there.
I'm not sure I've ever played there.
I don't think they were good when you were playing.
No.
I think they were slowly going up the leagues.
No. I think I played against their first team for Sedgley Seconds once, but at Park Lane. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'd never played there.
Yeah, so it's
they were paying money from about, God, 2006 or 2008, yeah, around then they started paying.
Yeah, they took a couple of guys from Manchester when I was playing there.
Yeah.
It's good setup, good coaching. And you know, they were very accommodating with us, so we are happy about that.
And the chat's been going back and forth between you and Byron still? Has that died down a bit?
It's back and forth. I'm going to try and psych it. No doubt I will show up and they'll try and play like Sail Sharks. That's what I think.
Right, well, that's obviously the big game in the rugby calendar, but we'll have some much less important and less noteworthy rugby championship chat after a word from some of the people that help make this podcast possible.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool. What do you think of those?
Awesome. I bought six of them yesterday.
Magnificent.
Yeah, excellent. Rugby Championship then.
So it was, my God.
Repeat of last weekend's games, but in the same country again. What's going on with the format of the competition? Well, Does anyone know about this?
I think they've nailed it. I really like it. So I thought, is this COVID? What's going on? It's to make it feel like a miniature tour. So they will reverse these fixtures, or I don't know, maybe because circular, because of course there's two games for South Africa against New Zealand. And then there'll be two games in Argentina. South Africa will go to Argentina once, and Argentina will go to South Africa once. And I think All Blacks do that with Australia.
So it's kind of a bit like the Six Nations in a sense, in that there'll be some years where one country you don't play at home.
Yes.
And then one country you play two at home.
Yes.
And then one you do one away, one home.
Yes. Yeah, so the All Blacks will not be seeing South Africa in New Zealand,
but they'll get two games at home against Argentina.
Yes, correct. And then the Australia New Zealand will play, because that's only a 4-hour time difference. They'll play once home and away, and then although it's more than a 4-hour time difference, South Africa and Argentina will play once home and away.
So next year South Africa
will play two tests in Australia. Two tests in New Zealand,
Argentina will go to Australia.
Yes, and South Africa will host Australia for two tests as well.
Okay, right, cool. So it's an element of the Six Nations with it that will change year to year.
And the reason I liked it so much, I was watching South Africa this week, and a point I've made multiple times, and I'll make it again, is just how good rugby is in South Africa when South Africa are a good team. How many times have we, during the course of this podcast, the last 10 years, talked about South Africa playing in front of an empty stadium, or people not caring, or the game
just being rubbish. Yeah. Them just not being as good as South Africa we know they can be because of the depth of talent that they have spread across the world.
It's a compounding effect, isn't it? You get the good team, and then all of a sudden this good team is backed up by ferocious crowds. So Ellis Park, it was this weekend, last weekend was wherever it was.
It was the football stadium.
Nelspruit. Yeah. It was, which is the home of Faf de Klerk.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Although he lasted
about 85 seconds.
And didn't Caleb Clark shin do a job on someone else this weekend?
It was Jesse Creel this week tackling just too damn low.
Too low. To tackle higher. That's the takeaway. Always said it.
But yeah, the Springboks just look like such a mighty proposition now, particularly at home, because the crowd's bouncing, the team is massive, they've got their own identity and style. They're just an absolute powerhouse.
Well, that just shows what an amazing coach Ian Foster is then,
doesn't it?
Because he got a great win away in that cauldron of rugby.
So I did know the score when I watched this game back. I'm still comfortable in saying that maybe some of the worst rugby I've ever seen over the course of the first 10 minutes was played in this game. By New Zealand.
I just loved the whole thing. That first 10 minutes, there was some terrible stuff. There was some brilliant stuff. That if you take that David Havili cross kick to Ardi Surveyor,
yeah,
who breaks the tackle of Jesse Creel and Andre Pollard.
He's so good at wide.
He's so good.
And then trips over him. He should have scored. Yeah, or he should have popped to Caleb Clark. He's just too good. He tried to do everything.
Butchered some. They should have scored a couple of tries. They just butchered.
The whole thing was monumental. It was magnificent.
It was great.
There's a few passes to Caleb Clark, who I've got some real reservations. Whether he's not up to speed with international rugby yet or something, I do not know.
But he does some great stuff, but yeah. Also like falling off that Am tackle, who just happens to also be one of the best wingers in the world as well.
Isn't he a great winger?
The best 13 in the world.
I thought, how is he getting so... I didn't realise he'd moved on to the wing. I thought he was finding himself in these positions. I was like, how is he doing this?
Because when Caleb Clark collided with Jesse Creel, who's a centre playing on the wing, Lucano Am moved out one.
Yeah.
Damien Villemzi seemed to move up to 10. Andre Pollard moved into 12. D'Alande 13. And then Lucano Am on the wing and Willie LaRue came to fullback.
Well, I wanted to talk about
that. I read it.
Yeah, I knew something was going on because Damien Wilhelms... Is it
Villemzi.
He's getting so much more time on the ball than you'd expect for a fullback to have. So, obviously, something's going on. But here's the thing I'd like to point out about South African backs. Now, they're so well-rounded. So, do you know when we look at England and we're talking about pairs of hands, and I always think about England, like, the more playmakers they have... the less the playmakers do, because they all want to pass the ball to each other. No one actually wants to run a line. Well, South Africa seems to have a group of players that can do well. They're just balanced. Like Wilhelmser, is that what you say his name?
Damien Wilhelmser.
Him, Lucano Am.
Lucano Am was far more balanced than I thought.
He's a great player.
He's such a talented defensive player. You often don't see what he was doing in this game because he just doesn't need to. But his running game in this was amazing.
He is. Just
I genuinely did not know he had that good a running game in his locker.
No, I didn't. I didn't know he had the sort of footwork and the steps and the angles which he undoubtedly does from the wing.
And the pass for the disallowed Mapimpi try was lovely as well.
Willie LaRue is another one. Who I've kind of had reservations, but you can't not say he's very balanced what he does. He knows when
very
to
talented.
Run, he knows when to pass. They just have when one of your main strike runners is your fly half because everyone else is so balanced, you're in a fairly good position. That's where South Africa are. They've got Pollard, who goes nice and straight, and they've got Thielande. But like, even some of the guys, like I think Mpimpi is turning into one of the great wingers now.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He's older than you think as well.
Yeah.
He's early 30s now.
And that's all about balance, because his finishing is ace. He's very strong. He's very fast. But he gets up in the air as well, contests.
Yeah.
In this game, the Cody Taylor try, which started on New Zealand's own line, was one of the best tries I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. And the Sam Kane one. That started with the Caleb Clark break out of his own 22.
Thinking of that one?
Well, no, because Taylor did as well.
Yeah.
The Cody Taylor was the one with second half Rico Ioane down the left wing.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah, but both of those were magnificent tries.
Incredible tries. And that's what New Zealand did differently to the previous number of games, and you can tell they must have been hurting, and that will have meant a lot to them. They were harder and tougher and grittier, and you called it last week, JB, that Shannon Frizzell needs to come back in.
100%.
There was a couple of guys that really put themselves about. He was one of them. I forget the name of the a couple of the props. One of the props really was throwing himself into everything. Anyway, so they were a lot tougher and grittier in defence and up in South Africa's face. And they just played a bit. And they also played a little bit looser when it was on.
Well,
go on, Jay.
On the looseness, I think... Maybe this is why they were so bad for the first 10 minutes, because they were awful. They were forcing things, and I think they sort of caught up with themselves towards the end when they actually began to catch balls and work out what each other were trying to do. They're still very incomplete. I think, in terms of raw talent, they've obviously got a hell of a lot, But Foster's not managed to stitch them together as well as previous coaches have. And I think that's the difference. Really.
Well, the scrum was fine this week.
Scrum was good.
Scrum was set piece was good in general.
Line out from both teams was a bit of a mixed bag.
It was, yeah. Like, no, Weber got taken off after half an hour.
Yeah.
But so did all the front row, didn't they?
There was big changes. Like, Kitsoff came on after 35 minutes, was it? Yeah. Which they did last time.
Smith, Moss starts, all came on but then, between 45 and 39.
I guess when you've got the technical jumpers reading the game, like Whitelock and Barrett and Lude and Eben Etzebeth and Peter Steph Detoy all on the pitch at the same time, it's probably an absolute nightmare for the hooker. You've got these technical jumpers who are all 6'7" and 2 metre plus wingspan. No wonder you can't hit. You're struggling to hit your own ball.
Yeah, sorry. So just so, so on the subs, Malcolm Marks came on 30 minutes. Kitsoff came on 35.
Yeah.
Jesper Visa came on 35.
Yeah.
So
that must have been an injury, the Visa one.
He came on for Vermaelen, didn't he? And Vermaelen just had a knee clear out, I think. As in, he had surgery on his knee a few weeks ago. So I'm not sure how much he's been playing and training.
Well, they were 15-0 down at the time, I think. So
they were, yes.
You know, maybe they were just tactical. I thought about this. If you change your front row with 30 minutes to go, well, what's the difference between changing it 30 minutes in?
Well, yeah, because it depends who you've got, but certainly Malcolm Marks is one up the pecking order than Dweber.
Yeah.
At least one up the pecking order. So you'd be expecting him to play 50 minutes. Yeah. Which is what he did. So it's not an unusual whether he plays the first 50 or the second 50.
And as long as you come off tactical, if there's an injury, you can go back on.
Yes,
if you're a front row.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I was saying to Tim before we came down here, when I see South Africa go into a line-out, particularly their five man with Etzebeth, Lude, Steph Detoy, and Vermaelen, which are four of the lads that they take into their five-man, I think these guys should be unbeatable. I can't imagine a set of circumstances where these guys could be beaten by 30 men, let alone 15.
But then Whitelock was making it an absolute nightmare for them.
Yeah.
There was one, I think it was the first lineup, that was clearly not straight up from Dweber onto the South African side, and Whitelock still scoops it across.
Whitelock is very smart in the line-out, though.
Very, very,
very
smart.
Very smart player.
I mean, what, 100-plus tests?
Yeah, he is missing. He's missing Ritalak, though. I have no doubts about that.
Yeah,
he might be New Zealand's most important player, because without him, Scott Barrett is not the answer to any question.
Well, we should give him lots of credit, because in South Africa, they won. Well, I mean,
it's
South Africa left tries out on the field, but in the end, they won with a little bit of breathing space.
Yeah,
they did.
It shows what a
hell of a game.
Yeah, what a difficult game rugby is to predict.
God, what Luke Pearce had a difficult game to officiate as well, didn't he?
I thought he did very well.
I did.
I have to say, I've read a bit of South African rugby Twitter and a bit in the press. They do not like the Luke Pearce performance. I thought he had a great game.
I thought
the tough call. Then there were some tough calls in there, like yellow card in Bowden Barrett, yellow card in Damian Valemsi after 2 minutes or whatever it was.
That was 100% the right thing to do.
It was 100% absolutely the right thing to do. The disallowed try was absolutely the right thing to do.
The one which I didn't like was the blocking. So scrum half blocks Wilhelmsi when he's running the ball back. No. Or Lukonu Am running the ball back.
Oh, that for the disallowed try.
Yeah, I think that was a block.
I thought that was.
I thought it was a good call.
The first angle from the side of the pitch, I couldn't see it. When they did the angle from behind the goalposts, the wide shot,
he backed into him.
He runs in, so he runs from like 10 yards to get him. Whitelock pushes him out of the way and he moves, but then he steps in again. So he moved twice into his way.
He stops running and actually moves backwards into Whitelock.
Yeah.
I think Whitelock should have tried hard and someone else should have tackled him. I just think.
Scrummer's fault for making it an issue.
He twice moved into Whitelock's way.
Because I think you're probably right. Willems or Lacanuam probably would have ghosted past Whitelock anyway.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
If you do something illegal, whether you actually make a difference or not, you're liable to get caught.
Yeah, I just didn't like. I didn't like that call. I think I'd have let the boys play. To coin a phrase.
I wanted to point out two moments that actually turn the game, and I think that is one, because I think Lucano Am would have been through
because they got 3 points off the back of it as well, so it's a 10 point swing.
Mm. The other one, and that I can forgive, it's cynical. Unless there's a try scored immediately, you don't get spotted for that.
Yeah.
So because if it's three breakdowns before, but unless you score from that phase or the phase after, that never gets spotted, and the Springboks make 50 metres upfield.
Good shot.
So that's it's fine margins, but it was the right call. The other one, which is monumentally stupid, which was gave the All Blacks 3 points at a crucial time instead of Springboks being 40 metres down the field, was the Jasper Visa clear out on Aaron Smith.
He mustn't have heard the whistle.
He's looking right at Luke Pearce. He's looking like me to you, Luke Pearce.
I've seen it.
Luke Pearce has got his arm in the air. Everyone stops. And another player, if it was another player, if it wasn't Jasper Visa, who is a dirty, cynical cheat.
And we love him for it.
Yeah. So I would give them the benefit of the doubt. But Jasper Visa, it's just stupid. He gave away 3 points.
I can't make the maths add up in my head, right? The ref's in front of you. I don't think he's... I'm going to have to say I don't think he's seen the ref. Or heard him.
He's like me to you. The only man on the pitch in bright white shirt with his arm in the air 3 metres away from you in your direct line of vision.
Mate, I mean, because if he does what you're implying, Phil, I think he should have been carded.
It wasn't a dangerous hit. It's just after the whistle hit.
No, because... You're deliberately disobeying the ref after a direct order, effectively, to cease the game of rugby, and you've smashed into the scrum half.
Penalty 3 points was punishment enough.
Yeah, penalty 3 points is just fine.
Okay.
It was just...
He mustn't have heard it. I can't imagine a man would do that.
It's Jasper Visa.
And
he thought anyone else. He had a chance to smash Aaron Smith.
Yeah, that's 100% it. That's no more complicated than that.
The throne of... Who's the other South African eight who never played in South Africa?
Who never played in South Africa?
Irish.
CJ Stander.
CJ Stander. He's basically what CJ Stander should have been. CJ Stander had played in South Africa.
If CJ Stander was a little bit better.
I bet they're on par, you know. I reckon they're very similar.
I think Jasper Visa is just a little bit bigger and more aggressive.
And they just look a little bit too much like hookers to be playing the break.
For South Africa, anyway.
I want to see more lads like Vermaelen and the Dupree boys.
And who's the one that you loved? Evan Roos.
We've not seen enough of Evan Roos yet.
The lads say... South Africa are a bit like John West Fish at the moment. It's what they leave out which demonstrates the policy.
Well done, New Zealand. Well done, Fozzy.
Oh, sorry. Just one last thing on this. Let's know where you stand. It's a little bit geeky. Do you think both teams lacked defensive control of the game?
Yes. And from South Africa particularly, more so than last week. And I would attribute that to their backline being shifted around.
Yeah.
So Lucano, I'm going onto the wing. As we said before, Valemde stepping up, Pollard moving out one, and Diolande moving out one.
New Zealand did really well in the aerial game, much, much, much better than last week. And Richie Mwanga, who had a shaky start, actually his tactical kicking as well as just general play was a significant improvement on last week.
He did have a shaky start because that pass after whatever it was, 6 minutes of New Zealand relative dominance, although as you said before, JB, they made mistakes in it. That the intercept that he threw to Peter Steftatoy, that was a very shaky start. Although Jordy Barrett to make the tackle on Peter Steftatoy and Rico Ioane to make the tackle on Lucano Am 5 yards from the try line.
Yeah.
I mean, Rico Ioane, he got man of the match, I think deservedly so. I thought he was brilliant.
I don't think the All Blacks have got nearly as much out of Rico Ioane from the
second view. Completely agree. I 100% agree with that. Yeah. I think we saw a lot of his best stuff in this game, but we've not for a while with him wearing a 13 shirt.
He scored that really smart little try. I liked it. It was the replacement centre, I'm sure it was. He flashes the dummy.
Oh, it's Havili.
It's not Havili.
No, it was Havili.
It was
not Havili.
It was Havili.
He went
lifted over the top, then realised, oh no, that pass has been cut off, and he managed to just with one hand, Fijian style,
It was.
Dummy the offload.
Wait for it. David Habili.
Place
David
the plan.
Correct, JV.
Yeah, it was nice.
And it was Vili LaRue who bought it hook, line, and sinker as
I
well.
I loved it because
Vili LaRue like jumps in the air, starfished. In
well,
the
I mean,
air.
That's how you make a double tackle into a single tackle. Yeah.
Well, there's a jump into Argentina or Australia. There was a try that Geronimo Della Fuente scored.
What a name.
Where he does his quad as he's running through and he stops and holds his quad. And actually, it acts accidentally like an unbelievable dummy, and he just...
I've seen this before.
The defenders
somewhere.
Keep moving, and he just finishes and scores.
I feel like I've seen this, but was it rugby league that's happened? Yeah, the NRL, someone did it in the NRL the other day.
Pretending to pull a hamstring.
Yeah, and then finish off a try.
Oh, I remember scoring a try away at York, where I was playing in the centre, playing 12, and taking the ball from a scrum on about the 22... Two defenders in front of me, and I dropped the ball. I genuinely dropped the ball, but managed to catch it just before my toes. And the two defenders just stood off me, and just went through and under the posts.
Yes,
if I could do that again. If you could perfect the drop.
Well, this is why things like bounce passes are so effective as attacking weapons. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Everyone just stops and you pick the ball up, and everyone's out of position. Yeah, anything which throws people,
yeah,
is usually quite good. It's like when professional footballers play five-a-side against amateurs and they can't get a read on what is going on.
Marcus Smith's jump.
Yeah,
the number of people, even though they know, right, we've got to watch out for when Marcus Smith does that jump, just...
He's going to do something.
He's going to do something. Just, but even though people know it's coming, he still...
Yeah.
Bamboozles people.
That Della Fuente try was phenomenal.
It was awesome.
I can't remember. Who's the Australian centre in this game? I can't say his name.
Icky Tau.
He scored something which I thought was... Well, he was involved in something which I thought was equally as impressive when he cuts through the middle. Was that one disallowed?
The rugby was great. Argentina, what a result.
Hell of a result. For them, last week they were, 14 points up with 20 minutes to go, something like that, and exploded, fell apart.
Mm.
Pick your analogy, they weren't good for those last 20 minutes. And they kind of got themselves into a similar position this time and then just put Australia to the sword in those last 20 minutes.
Well, they're volatile. Great. You don't know what you're going to get with them. I mean, you can literally get them losing to Scotland or beating the All Blacks away. It doesn't really matter to them. I guess it's how they feel.
I'd love to have heard some monotone Argentinian radio commentators speaking English on this one as their second language, but we got treated to the Australian commentary this time, and I just want to shout, I don't know who it is, I don't think it's Sean Maloney, whoever the lead commentator is for Stan Sport.
Is it not Sean Maloney?
It might be Sean Maloney, but he's got, I don't know, he's either first pundit rather than the lead comms.
I think he does the lead comms. He does the Nick Mullins type role.
He's got the most Australian voice
ever.
I love it as well. And I love how he occasionally, when he's saying certain people's names when they're doing something good, he goes into slow motion. So he'll be talking about Australia going through. Then it's like, Geronimo de la Fuente. Bobby Valentini.
Oh, yeah. Bobby V.
Bobby V's some player.
Oh, Hunter Pie Sammy! I love it.
I do love when he flipped from Robert Valentini to when he was Bobby V on the rampage.
has Bobby V signed off on this?
I don't know.
Australia going there. It's Teniela Tupo. Like someone hits half speed on him. By the way, I did get contacted by someone. I can't remember who it is. They messaged me on Twitter just to say, I'm glad I'm not the only psychopath who listens to podcasts at 1.5 speed.
I was thinking about this last week, actually, after you revealed that you do that, Tim.
I get so much more...
Psychopaths.
I find it really interesting because you are obviously a professional broadcaster. Mm. And as a professional broadcaster, you know the importance of tempo and spacing and pause and leaving the gap to leave the listener wondering.
Sometimes it's what you don't say.
And then, so I just find it astonishing that you can, like, maybe it's because you see all of that. You're like the guy plugged into the Matrix, seeing the blonde and the brunette.
Yeah,
because you can see
my brain just works at 1.5 speed.
Because you know it all, you don't need those. You can fill in those pauses anyway. Whereas I actually lose context if I listen to it faster. Yeah,
really interesting.
Most of the time I listen to podcasts is because I want to waste time, not because I want to go quicker.
I just want to get more done. But it's interesting you say that, Phil, because I have made sure I have a break between when I stop listening to a podcast and when I start doing my radio show, because if I listen to fast stuff all the way when I'm on the train from Manchester to London, I might start, it's Radio Radio, here's Bon Jovi.
We've had to pay twice as many royalties to songs if you're talking too fast.
I do. If I listen to a good podcast, I like to I can't go straight onto another interesting content podcast because my brain gets confused between the two of them. I need to put like a music break or a silence break in.
No, I don't do that. I just plow on.
It's all one big podcast soup in your brain.
I'm just going to demonstrate something that was also quite fun. I will just say, and I think I've mentioned this before, but that's up. That's podcast inception. That's me talking on a podcast. Well, if you go down to 0.5 speed,
oh god,
you can imagine you know what it's like for us to what we sound like when we're drunk after 17 Negronis. For example,
to kick off the season with you all.
Oh no!
Oh god,
he's going up against the All Blacks.
That sounds horrendous. Who would listen to this?
What game plan the All Blacks would come with? Third Springboks.
I've never heard this.
Dear.
I went to a gig.
You went to a gig?
You did go to a gig.
Did it.
You're such a muso.
Yeah, went to watch Pete Tong with his orchestra.
I love it. So that Pete Tong and his orchestra is the first gig you've been to since R. Kelly.
I walked in as well. No one checked my ticket. I didn't even buy a ticket. I just walked in.
Did you just happen to be passing, or did you plan? I'm going to try and get in.
I went to call and Bay to have a beer, and the lad was with says, "Oh, I'm off to Pete Tong." I was like, "That's just not my thing." Well, we'll just see if you can get in. Well, may as well. I quite want some more beers. Just walked in, and that was it. Saved myself £50. Easy.
Nice. Amazing.
Yeah, no one even there to check the ticket.
Was it a good night?
It's quality. I would highly recommend it. I thought it was brilliant.
Hmm.
So
my kind of scene. I would have quite enjoyed that.
Yeah. I mean, he's no James Haskell, but he was good. He was good.
I've got a new hero. I've got a new rugby hero. Thomas Gallo,
Gallo
for Argentina. He's awesome. He looks about 5'2", tall and wide. He's a cuboid rugby player.
Yeah, do you know what his height and weight is listed at?
I would suggest he's 5'9" and 118 kgs.
18.
He's listed at 5'9" and a half, 176 and 107 kilos. But that's his Wikipedia, so take it with a pinch of salt.
He's a big, strong boy.
Do you know who he plays for?
No.
JB, you might know.
I do not
RGC?
Know.
Not RGC.
No.
You're the beloved Benetton.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Did not know that.
Not for much longer.
No.
He's going to... He's going to end up at Racing or somewhere like that.
Where did... I know he's a tight head, but... Slimani, he played Stad. Did he play Clermont as well?
Sure, he did play Clermont. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Slimani, or was it? He played for one of the Parisian. So
he's a loose head, right?
Yeah.
So the guy you're thinking of, who was at Clermont, who's similar stature, is
Slimani. Dominici.
Not Dominici. Domingo.
Domingo. Thomas Domingo. Domingo.
That's it.
He was a loose head. Yeah, because Rabo Slimani, whatever he's called, Rabat.
He plays across the front row.
Tight head. Yeah, he can play tight head and loose head. Plays for Clermont and previously played for Stade Francais, where he had 187 appearances.
So predominantly Stade Francais, you were right.
Mm.
Thomas Gallo, how old is he?
23.
Yeah, he's going to be a hell of a player.
Yeah.
Sounds like he's already doing all right.
Yeah. Well, four tries already in his six games or whatever that he's played. for Argentina. Yeah. So, two against Australia.
Just a few more results which you might be interested in.
Yeah.
Flandino played Sedgley Park.
Sedgley, yeah.
I think 30-something, 20-something. So that's a much closer result than I'd anticipated.
You never know with I've not seen anything other than the little clip that you shared with me. You never know how much of a, if it's a 60-man squad, you could play thirds or quarters or.
So
you,
no, that little clip certainly suggested something was going.
There was a mismatch on that clip that you shared with me.
And the other one was really interested. Dan Bibby's debut, I assume,
for Colby.
Going down hard to RGC, but again,
really,
RGC beat them, which I found very interesting. I didn't think RGC were that good at it.
Yeah.
There again, you don't know what squads were put out.
Yes, yeah, and what squads were put out for what period of time.
Yes, quite.
Mm.
So all very interesting stuff.
So everyone's beating everyone in the Rugby Championship.
Yes.
Quite enjoying it.
Yep.
What are next week's fixtures?
I'm just going to get the table, actually.
So Argentina are top.
Argentina are top on points difference because everyone's 1-1.
Yeah. So, wow, it goes almost reverse order that you would think. So Argentina top, Australia in second, because they both have 5-point wins in the bag. Although you would argue that they have played the easiest teams in each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then New Zealand in third place with... is that right? This can't be right. Because it's got New Zealand in third place, but with a minus 4 points difference.
New Zealand won by more points than they lost by. No.
New Zealand have got minus 4 points difference than South Africa. So I am. I'm on the BBC website, which is so, obviously my mistake. So let's go to Rugby Championship, the official. It should be anyway. South Africa in third.
And next week's games are. Is it next week?
It will be next week, I think. Don't think they'll have
just
a rest
while you're
week.
Working that out, how are you enjoying Manchester United this season?
Oh, fantastic. I almost wore my United, my favourite blue United shirt. Oh, there's a rest week. That's annoying.
Yeah, they've got to fly everywhere.
Yeah, that is a shame. So it is Australia host South Africa, New Zealand host Argentina in 2 weeks' time on the 27th.
By which time we'll know the result of the big grudge match.
Yes.
Ross and Dale, Tok H.
Couple of days after.
Yeah, sure.
Manchester United.
Mm.
Now, I am a United fan. I do have a United shirt. I've got a few old ones as well. I've been a lifelong fan, although, as someone once described, if you cut my arm off, it wouldn't bleed red. Because I'm not a diehard United fan. I care far more. I care about watching almost any rugby game than watching United. But I like following the results. And I was like cautiously optimistic that this season might be the turnaround. I know nothing about Ten Hag, but people wanted him. Therefore, you trust that people aren't all idiots, and some of those people who wanted him might know a thing or two. You've got out Pogba, who I thought we never should have re-signed, because even though he's an incredibly talented player, he's not always motivated to do anything other than what serves poor Pogba best. You got rid of him, so maybe you've cleared the atmosphere in the changing room. And evidently, I was totally, totally wrong, because they are just a total disaster.
Football is interesting me at the moment for two reasons. One is Barcelona and the direct comparisons we can draw between Barcelona and Premiership Rugby.
Yeah,
which is the financial levers are almost identical to the financial levers that Premiership Rugby pulled, and it's not going to end well for either organisation.
The Barca thing is going to be fascinating to watch that unfold.
Yeah.
But I just don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah. So, if people want to explain the Barcelona deal, just look at what the Premiership Rugby did when they sold their central commercial revenue. And you've basically got what Barcelona are doing for their La Liga revenue. Exactly the same stuff. They've also sold a bit of Barcelona Studios as well. And there's lots of other bits and pieces you can dive into. But very interesting stuff. United, the other one which I love at the moment, because I think United are more exciting when they're bad. I think rugby's best when South Africa are good. I think football's more exciting when United are bad. But the lesson rugby can learn from United, do not listen to the fans. They are morons.
Agreed.
They're having a walkout next week, apparently.
Because they're idiots. I mean, literally, the identity of the United fans now is more about being bad. If they were good, they would hate it, because they'd have nothing to do.
Nothing
to moan about. So, if you think about what United fans have demanded, they've basically got everything they've ever demanded. They've got the managers that they demanded, they've got most of the signings that they demanded, and they whinge about 100 million being taken out of the club, which sounds like a lot of money, but it's the cost of one player. Cost one player over 10 years, and these guys have been through it. You can accuse the owners. I like people who accuse Premiership owners of many, many things. One of the things you can't accuse them of is not spending money. So I think fans largely should shut up and let experts be experts when it comes to signing players. Although I'm not a massive fan of experts, so
yeah, you hate experts.
Yeah,
no one's allowed to talk about anything.
Only I'm allowed to talk about things
because you are both a fan and an expert.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the good experts, not the bad ones.
Yeah. An expert who agrees with me.
Yeah.
Let that be the big takeaway from the pod. Any more for any more?
Nope. All good. Let's do some preview pods for some of the teams that were coming up.
Yeah, and thank you for your emails on those. Keep emails on any rugby-related subject coming in. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Find more content at patreon.com/eggchasers and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.